From the land grant university in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 22nd day of February, 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois, will be here to look at the cash grain market. Dave Dickey will be along with a look at today's agricultural news. And we'll hear all about the agricultural weather forecast from Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute, and along the way, of course, a couple of other items that will bring you up to speed on as we make our way through this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
Let's check the numbers on a Friday afternoon as they finished up in Chicago. The soft red winter wheat at $7.13.5, down 7.75 for the March. The May at $7.17, 7 cents lower. In July, the harvest month, $7.22.75, down 5.25. The hard red in Kansas City at $7.74.75, down 20 cents. The corn pit now back in Chicago, $6.90. And these are all closes but not settlement prices. Down 0.75 cents. Again, March corn at $6.90 a bushel. The May at $6.84, down a penny and a half. And July at $6.72, down a penny and a quarter. September futures $5.73.75, down a quarter of a cent. And December contract down a penny and three quarters at $5.52.25 for the harvest month in the corn. The March at $5.63, down 2 cents. And next year's May at $5.71.5, down a quarter. March soybeans $14.63, a big loss, down 24.75. May at $14.44, down 26.5. And July soybeans $14.28, down 26.5. August $13.90, down 24 cents. November beans at $12.67.5, a loss today, down 9.5 cents. January at $12.69.75, down 12 cents for the afternoon. March bean meal futures at $4.26.90, down $10.40. March bean oil at $50.34, 97 cents lower. Live cattle in the April contract at $128.22.5, 40 cents higher. June at $124.47.5, up 40. The April feeders at $143.77.5, 60 cents higher. May contract at $147.12.5, up 62.5. And the lean hogs finished the April unchanged at $89.90 per 100 pounds. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures on the afternoon, $93.16 a barrel, up 32 cents. The March contract at $3.79, that's up 4.3 cents. Ethanol trading at $2.36.4, a penny and 4 cents higher. And the difference between those two, now 71.5 cents, that's 2.9 cents, wider than it was yesterday. Natural gas in the March contract at $3.28.4, 3.8 cents higher. The heating oil or diesel fuel at $3.10.4, just 0.9 cents higher. Gold futures at $1,572.30 an ounce, down $5.80, and the dollar trading at 81.48. That's up 0.01 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like. As it comes from the National Weather Service, for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon, a chance of drizzle, a little bit of snow, cloudy, a high of 35 degrees on a southwest wind at 16 miles an hour, gusting all the way to 21. The precipitation chance is set at 20% for the afternoon. And then this evening, a chance of drizzle, some snow before 7 o'clock central time, cloudy, a low of 21. West-southwest winds at 10 to 15, gusting to 20. Chance of precipitation remains at 20%. And then tomorrow, cloudy skies, a high of 31. Saturday night, mostly cloudy at 18. On Sunday, sunny skies and 39 degrees, partly cloudy on Sunday night, and 25. Monday, a chance of rain, some maybe snow as well between 7 and 1. Then a chance of rain after 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Central time, mostly cloudy on Monday, a high of 40 degrees, 30% chance of rainfall. Rain and snow likely Monday evening, cloudy and a low of 31. Tuesday, rain and snow likely, cloudy and 37. Tuesday night, rain and snow, cloudy and 27. Wednesday, mostly cloudy and a high of 37 degrees. And Wednesday night, cloudy and 26. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
This is the closing market report for Friday afternoon, the 22nd day of February. On the phone line, Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Hello, Todd.
Well, it was an interesting week and pretty rough week if you were hoping soybeans were going to go higher.
You know, I woke up this morning saying to myself, how am I going to explain to Todd and the listeners last Friday how the beans could be the leader to the downside? Because that's kind of how we left it when it came to our conversation last week, Todd. And thank goodness for today's trade when it comes right down to it. In all seriousness, I do think that maybe we do have the beans, which I don't think you can count out at this point. I don't think today's price action, it hurts the bull. It hurts their confidence level, but we're still going to be up 35 or 36 for the week in the March contract. We're still going to be above the 200-day moving average, it looks like, before the settlement comes through. I think maybe what we did today was we started to see a reversal of the spreads because the weekly export sales were so good for wheat and very good for corn. We had not been able to trade a lot of friendly news for the corn because the USDA Ag Forum couldn't get our feet on the ground with the wheat because of the blizzard. So beans really had the leadership to the upside pretty much all week after Tuesday's blasting off. But then today the export sales came out with an actual negative in soybeans. And I think that in its most simplistic form probably kicked everybody back on their heels that were bullish. They saw the March options go off the board and said, why not take some profit? Why am I long right now? I'm long for Argentine weather, which looks to be getting some precip this weekend, and I'm long because of a port strike in Santos and Paranagua. That could be taken care of in 2 days if they get their act together. So I think it was just a liquidation pressure and based upon the weekly export sales.
Do you still want the soybeans to lead to the downside?
I don't want them to lead to the downside. I think it goes back to if we are really this sick in terms of demand, and that's what the market believes. What's the market telling us right now? In my opinion, the market's trying to tell us that we have really sick demand in corn and really sick demand in wheat. I don't agree with that. I think the recent demand of the last 2 to 3 weeks would say that's not the case. But if they're right, if we really have that weak a demand, it's probably because our economy is getting weaker and our global trade is going to go down. And I think the most susceptible commodity complex to that actually being correct and accurate is the soy complex, because China is struggling right now. Yes, they pumped a lot of money into their coffers and into their financial system the second half of 2012, but now they're starting to pull that back. So it's got to be one or the other, in my opinion. Either the wheat and corn are undervalue, or the beans are overvalue, or they all three try to go up together, and that's kind of how I'm looking at it.
And we've talked about global demand, and in China, in particular the economy in China, with you over the past 12 months. A couple of times there were points at which it appeared the Chinese economy was stalling, and stalling looks like a really good growth rate for the rest of the world. Stalling nonetheless. Is there any more fear today than the last time we checked in on that?
Well, I think what the USDA said in their updated agricultural trade outlook, which came out this week, and the last number they had put together was back in November, what they talked about in their world growth was pretty poignant to me. They said trade growth in 2012 dropped 2% from a robust 7% in 2011. And so I think that all goes back to what the Europeans did to us as far as the EU economy. Quite frankly, now I think it's our turn. Do we get the sequestration volleyball out of the net, or do we go ahead and get all messed up mentally in the markets because of more fiscal and government inactivity and indecision? And I think that hurts the sentiment of the trade, and I think that's where we're probably going forward in the next couple of weeks. That's probably my biggest concern.
Has the trade to this point ignored, at least commodity trade, ignored sequestration, or have they really? And you can divide that between grains and livestock, I suppose, if you want. But
good point. Well, I think you have to divide it between the grains and livestock. The talk about federal inspectors not being in the meats, I think, really did a negative impact on the meat complex, along with some of the talk earlier this week and the horse meat scandal in the European Union. I think the market in the livestock has looked to me a lot like the corn market here recently, where the cash markets are holding up very, very well, and the CME cash index for hogs is holding up extremely well with the cutout, but the futures market has had just a terrible sentiment about it. So I don't think the corn and beans and wheat have necessarily priced in any of this sequestration issue because they haven't seen the trigger in the dollar or the bonds or the equities markets yet. They're watching the gold market. I do think that is something that the trade has been really watching and maybe has been a little bit of the cause of our negative outlook in the feed grains especially.
Well, March 1 isn't very far away. Which day will they believe triggers come?
I think by the time you get to the middle of March, you're setting the stage for the equities markets, and that's probably where we have the most vulnerable situation for the commodities. Then we'll start talking about the grain stocks and talking about the acreage report as we get to the end of the month. So after the USDA WASDE numbers, there's not a lot of information out there until you get to the end of the month. That seems to me maybe the worst potential time period for the grain complex if we don't establish a firm foundation on demand.
We mentioned livestock and USDA. Cattle on feed report was released this afternoon. Those numbers were on feed at 94%, placed at 102, marketed at 106. What do they mean?
I think they're very welcome marketing numbers, Todd, because they're at the top end of the trading range, and we have been talking, like we were just talking about, a lot about the weaker pork and beef demand, and negative sentiment has been in the cattle and hog complex. We also had a very nice weekly export sales number for beef this morning. So on some of the charts that I look at, we had a technical buy on the front-end fat cattle. I think this week's close, the way we closed technically, and then the way this report came out with the beef exports also, maybe that buy signal gets some traction next week.
Okay, and then let's turn our attention back to the Ag Forum, which was yesterday and today in Washington, D.C. I'm sure you've watched some of the numbers as they've come out over the wire services. Which ones did you find most surprising and of most interest?
I think, and you won't be surprised by my answer, but I think the most surprising, because the trade didn't really delve into it at all, was the fact that Glauber spent some time talking about abandonment of wheat and how Oklahoma, Nebraska, and Kansas had 50% of their crop in very poor conditions compared to 10% last year. And he also talked about the need for spring rains to not have what could be record abandonment. You know, I'm paraphrasing some of those things, but he made specific points in his speech. He came out with 56 million acres. They came out with a carryover level that I think was about 9% less than this current one we're running in 12-13. Market didn't even flinch at that. They looked at the corn ending stocks. They looked at the bean acres or whatever they decided to, but essentially took anything that was somewhat friendly to wheat and just threw it into the closet, in my opinion. I think that's where, once we come back next week, if these 6 to 10 day models are below normal precip and the 8 to 14 is below normal precip and those end up being correct, I think the market may have to come back and talk about these things.
So you want wheat to lead again?
You have to. I think with the wheat corn spread now down to less than 25 cents as we settle out the market this afternoon, I think we have to. And I think that goes back to why Glauber was so negative about the corn, because it was about the exports and how the Asian exports had been given away essentially to the wheat market and to competition and to our drought. So I think you just have to have the wheat, especially the Kansas City wheat, come back around here.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Todd. Talk to you later.
We'll talk to you for Commodity Week. That is Mike Zuzlo. He's at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. Joins us here on the Friday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
You can always find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. In fact, we'll post our Commodity Week program there by about 6 o'clock this evening. Now, here's Dave Dickey with a look at today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, U.S. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack says that members of Congress need to stop writing letters to him about how the department should deal with budget cuts under the sequester and instead write a new bill to resolve the issue. USDA faces the prospect of implementing just under $2 billion in budget cuts in the coming weeks that will affect the budget for the final 6 months of the fiscal year. In a letter released this week to Congress, Vilsack outlined the risks, including as much as 15-day furloughs for meat inspectors, costing roughly over $10 billion in production losses. Members of Congress and people in the meat industry have cited the 1990s government shutdowns to reflect that meat inspectors were essential employees who were not furloughed during those events. Vilsack says that lawmakers, quote, are using an old lens that doesn't fit. Meanwhile, CME Group warned its customers yesterday that federal spending cuts set to start March 1st may affect the physical delivery and cash settlements for some livestock and dairy futures contracts. CME said the budget cuts also could result in the disruption of USDA reports that are used in the daily calculation of the CME Feeder Cattle Index and CME Lean Hog Index. Business and labor groups announced agreement yesterday on the principles of a new system to bring lower-skilled workers to the U.S., a key priority for a comprehensive immigration bill. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce and the AFL-CIO reached consensus after weeks of closed-doors negotiations. The principles include agreement on the need for a way to let businesses more easily hire foreign workers when Americans are not available to fill jobs. That will require a new kind of worker visa program that does not keep all workers in a permanent temporary status and responds as the U.S. economy grows and shrinks. The American Petroleum Institute and other groups have filed an appeal with the U.S. Supreme Court for a review of a recent district court decision rejecting a challenge to the Obama administration's grant of partial waivers for use of E15 motor fuel. In its decision, the D.C. court said it was not convinced that the petitioners, who included oil and food industries, would be harmed by the introduction of E15 for use in vehicles model year 2001 and newer. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. You can always find us online if you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming, including today's programs and Commodity Week. Our guest this week, Champaign County farmer Eric Rund, who has recently returned from Brazil and South America. He'll bring us up to speed on what's been happening in the southern hemisphere and what the crop looks like there and what the prospects are for it to compete on the global marketplace. It all happens during Commodity Week. You can hear it online at willag.org. We'll post it by about 6 o'clock this evening. Up next, you know, the ag economists at Illinois and Ohio have looked at the net payout figures for federal crop insurance. I'll have more on which crops are the most heavily dependent upon the government for subsidies. The net farm payments are the lowest for rice, soybeans, and corn, say University of Illinois Farm Management Specialist Gary Schnitke and the Ohio State University's Carl Zuloff. They cooperated in a quick study looking at federal crop insurance net farm payments. The net payments are a calculation of the total payouts per crop minus the total premiums paid in. Again, here are the results of those calculations. Gary Schnitke.
Net farm payments are the lowest for rice, soybeans, and corn, and the highest for sorghum, cotton, and wheat. So the lowest means is that, you know, that rice, soybeans, and corn received relatively less for what they paid in for what they paid out. Sorghum, cotton, and wheat have received more. And it's highly correlated to how risky the crop is. Rice is not as risky of a crop. It's all irrigated pretty much, so it doesn't have much yield risk. Soybeans and corn, while they're risky, they're less risky than, say, cotton in the South.
Schnitke and Zuloff stated this net farm insurance payment as a value of the production.
Rice got 0.8% of net farm insurance payment compared to its total production. Corn, 2.7%. So if corn has a $800 value of production, 2.7% come back in net payments. Sorghum and cotton are at 10%. So 10% of their value comes back in terms of insurance payments.
The difference among the crops and the payouts is directly related to yield variability. Rice is irrigated and therefore very stable. Other crops are not so stable, and this instability in yield goes to the question of fairness across the crops, says Gary Schnittke.
And that does raise an equity issue, because if and all these crop insurance payments are subsidized, so those are crops with more yield variability are getting a higher proportion of it in their subsidy.
One way to make this inequity more balanced, suggests Schnittke and Zuloff, is to pick a percentage as to the value of the production and apply it evenly. The payout is equal, for instance, to 2% of the value of the production. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Auditory Care Center, an independent hearing care center serving Champaign, Piatt, Ford, Vermilion, and other East Central Illinois counties. Auditory Care Center offers hearing evaluations as well as selection, fitting, and repair of hearing aids at 892-5959 in Rantoul.
Well, this is the closing market report. It comes to you from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. On this Friday afternoon, let's check the cash grain market on the phone line. Bruce Bostard at the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company in Ludlow, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
Did farmers try or want to move beans, old crop that is, this week?
We saw some cash beans moving. Yesterday was a decent day, and then on the rally early today, then as we moved into the day, saw the board roll over and die, and looked like basis broke back pretty decent during the day, too. So that would indicate that there was a fair chunk of cash beans that have moved over the last couple of days.
How much did basis break back during the day?
Oh, I've seen anywhere from 3 to 10 cents.
So they've filled their coffers for the moment. When's the next stop for them, do you think?
Oh, typically when you get into this where we're losing old crop export business and you've got the processors, you'll see somebody put a meal or an oil sale on, want to buy enough cash to take the other side of that, lock in the crush, and then get out again. It's sort of what we've seen on ethanol, too. If those guys coming in and when they can push crush out and lock in some margins, come in for some corn, and when it's not, just drop back out again.
I suspect it's easier to find soybeans than corn, though.
I would say so, yes.
Tell me about the corn market.
Corn, some cash movement again. We're not back to where we've seen new contract highs, so it's relatively limited, but the producers have been good sellers. A little more interest maybe on some new crop sales, but those, if you look at our book on for new crop, still way, way behind what we would think would be traditional for this time of year.
The ethanol industry back and moving in full production again?
Back in production. We've seen some plants come back in. It's really makes you wonder on the jumping in and out, if they can come in and do it on what is, oh, like a reasonable basis for the area or for the market at this time of year. It makes sense. You have a positive crush, and you can lock in a crush for a couple months, or we had some opportunities too a week or two ago. But if they come in and you start blowing their brains out, you know, paying 20, 30 cents over the neighborhood to do that, it's hard to see how that keeps them in a positive crush position.
Man, what are your bids for the day?
We are at 710 on nearby corn and 1471 on soybeans.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostard is with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. I'll be back in just 2 minutes when we'll talk with Jim Angel at the Illinois State Climatologist Office and the Prairie Research Institute right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
It's National Margarita Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1630, popcorn was introduced to the colonists by Native Americans for the first Thanksgiving dinner. Native Americans were growing it for more than 1,000 years before the arrival of European explorers. By the way, in 1964, scientists digging in southern Mexico found a small cob of popcorn that was 7,000 years old. In 1857, Heinrich Hertz was born, a German physicist. He was the first to broadcast and receive radio waves. In 1879, Woolworth's, the first chain store, opened in Utica, New York. In 1900, Paul Colesman was born. A German-American engineer, he invented the world's first accurate barometric altimeter. The invention played a major role in establishing routine air service and thus trade around the world. In 1925, Sir Thomas Clifford Allbutt died, an English physician. He invented the short 6-inch clinical thermometer. Before that, a foot-long thermometer was used that took 20 minutes to determine a patient's temperature. And in 1987, Andy Warhol died, an American painter of the pop art movement in the 1960s. He made paintings of Campbell's soup cans, Coca-Cola cans, and other American products. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Well, it's a Friday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason. On the phone line, Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute. He serves as the state climatologist. Good afternoon to you, Jim. Let's talk first about what you've seen over the last couple of days and what kinds of things have happened in terms of snowfall and rain and what we might have over the next week or so.
Last night, I think the meteorologist called it a wintry mix, and we certainly saw a little bit of everything. I saw a little sleet, a little freezing rain, some snow, and all kind of mixed together there. We ended up with 2.7 inches of snow on the ground here in Champaign. And that brings our winter total up to 6.7 inches. So that kind of tells you right there, not a whole lot of snow this winter for us. But we did get 55 hundredths of an inch of actual water content in that wintry mix. And so precipitation-wise, we did okay with that. And so we're actually here in Champaign and elsewhere in the central part of Illinois in pretty good shape so far this winter. Because we haven't gotten the snow, we've gotten the rain. In many cases, those have fallen on unfrozen soils, at least from time to time. So it's done a pretty good job of recharging things.
Yeah, and there is some water standing on parts of east central Illinois. I was up towards Watsika this week, and there was water standing. And I know you've been out and talked about some water standing in fields as well.
That's right. Yes, and we certainly did not see that this time last year. You know, we were already starting to get into trouble with dry weather at the end of February last year. Didn't see any water standing in fields. Didn't see a lot of water flowing in the rivers and streams. But it looks a much better shape this year.
Yesterday, the National Weather Service released its longer term forecast. What did they say?
That's right. They for Illinois and pretty much all of the Midwest, they have for March an increased chance of above normal temperatures and above normal precipitation. And the same story for that March, April, May time frame as well. You get into the summer months of June, July, and August, they don't say much about precipitation, but for temperature, they have us in an increased chance of above average temperatures. So warm, wet spring, warm summer. The warm, wet spring is actually something we've seen a lot of the last couple of years. I think about 8 out of 10 cases of the last 10 years have been that way. Only 2005 and 2012 were warm and dry.
Thank you so much for taking the time with us this afternoon.
You're welcome, Todd.
That's Jim Angel. He's at the Illinois State Water Survey right here in Urbana-Champaign. Helps us wrap up this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. Don't forget to visit our website at willag.org. It's brand new. It looks a little different. Don't be surprised when you get there. You'll find Commodity Week, of course, and a Commodity Week link as well. That's at willag.org. We'll post a Commodity Week by about 6 o'clock this evening.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.